You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Trishel, neurodiversity. Oh, sorry. First, you're on the Monday Wire with Trishel and I. We will have a continuation of Trishel's story talking about neurodiversity. Trishel.
So I also reached out to Rich Rowley from Brain Badge in order to get learn more about how they directly work with neurodivergent individuals within the workforce and how they see themselves as an organization going forward.
What is the goals of the Brain Badge, and how have you guys started to help with assisting neurodiversity in the workplace?
So the goal's just basically to make the world a better place for neurodiverse people. What we're doing so far is that we've got three awesome corporate stakeholders: Auckland Transport, The Warehouse Group, and Kiwi Bank. We are working with them to co-create the Brain Badge certification, which looks at, it's not just about recruitment and getting neurodiverse people into work. It looks at every single aspect of work, from recruitment right through to leaving work. We use corporate innovation techniques, human-centered design, user experience design. And so it's basically understanding what that journey through work looks like for different neurodiverse people, identifying where the kind of pain points are, because they're the opportunities to put in improvements, and then really working with the organizations to see what improvements we can put in and how we measure them to see whether or not they're effective. So it's never going to be some kind of certification process that we finish it and it's done and we just keep doing it for years. It's going to be constantly evolving. As we get more stakeholders involved, we're going to find out more information, constantly keep refining it and honing it and iterating it. So yeah, it's just about, one, it's making it less discriminatory and hopefully leveling the playing field a little bit for neurodiverse people to actually get work. But there's an awful lot of neurodiverse people who are already in employment who, you know, everybody does it tough, but add 40% onto the difficulty factor of your day if you're neurodiverse. That's how we view it. So it's about understanding that neurodiverse people experience the world differently and sometimes communicate differently to more neurotypical people, and getting businesses to recognize that and make reasonable accommodations for it.
And you've spoken on this matter with, it's not just about like the recruitment, but it's also while being in the workplace with neurodiverse people. A lot of neurodiverse people mask even in the workplace for fear of discrimination.
Sure.
What has it been like with people like thinking whether they should declare that they are either on the autism spectrum or have ADHD or the like?
At the moment, this is the problem with it. It's kind of where the pride community was in the 60s, 70s. The neurodiverse communities, you know, in a similar situation. If you kind of out yourself, you're taking a chance on how it's going to be perceived. It's quite a bold thing to do at the moment, is to actually say something. We know of people who work for some very big organizations who've actually said something and ended up being managed out of job. But on the other hand, we know some people who've said something and actually it's been really well received, and the organizations tried to, you know, work with them to understand, make things better. So it's a very mixed bag. You know, shake the dice, give it a roll and see which way it lands at the moment. But that's one of the key reasons why we want to do Brain Badge. So the organizations that get Brain Badge, it's not going to say that they're perfect places for neurodiverse employees, because every organization's got a lot of work to do. But what it is saying is at least that they've got a basic understanding and they're actually beginning that journey of trying to make things better. It's challenging. I work for a really awesome, inclusive organization where I had psychological safety, and even though I had all of that, it still took me 6 years before I dared say anything to the person who ran that business, because at the moment it's a scary thing to do. So hopefully in 4 or 5 years time, when Brain Badge is well established, we'd hope that that situation has dramatically changed for organizations that are Brain Badge certified. We'd hope that neurodiverse people who are working for those organizations actually begin to feel safe enough to say something, and that if they do speak out, that, you know, they'll be heard and acknowledged, and the organization will work with them to make some changes.
And I think that speaks to largely a lot more awareness around like neurodiversity and how it's more than just like how a lot of people, let's say on the autism spectrum or those who have ADHD, it's not that they're lazy or unfocused or struggle to find their place in the workplace, but sometimes it's also just the way that their brain is hardwired differently.
Yeah, I mean, it's like me, you know, a lot of organizations practice agile and they do, you know, they divvy work up into these things called sprints, which run for, you know, some might run for a week or 2 weeks or a month. And in organizations, they kind of have this neurotypical view of what progress looks like, that every day somebody comes in and they do a little bit of work and gradually over the space of 2 weeks, they keep chipping away at the work. Now, I don't work like that. I can't work like that. So if I'm on a sprint like that for pretty much the whole 2 weeks, I would do nothing. And then right at the last minute, I would do it all together, you know, the day before it was due to be handed in. I'd be thinking about it for the 2 weeks, but actually sitting down and making myself actually do the work, that happens at the last minute. And so it's understanding differences like that. And I don't function well in 9-to-5 environments. It's like, you know, sometimes I like working late at night and or early in the morning. It all depends. Sometimes during the day I've got nothing in the tank to do any work. So yeah, there's lots of factors involved in it, and the education system and the world of work is a very neurotypical place, and all of the expectations are around what works for neurotypical people, and there's not a lot of accommodation for people who fall outside of that kind of center ground, if you like.
And that actually speaks to some of the experiences I have, like whether it's in uni or even getting like work such as this done, that I will constantly be thinking about the tasks that I have at hand, but sometimes it's just really hard to just sit down and get it done.
Yeah. I mean, I have thought with my ADHD, I think it gets really misunderstood. If you read, you know, every time you read academic research and read an abstract, it'll say something like ADHD is typified by an inability to pay attention. And that's just rubbish. I've just got an inability to do boring stuff. If I'm not engaged with it, it's incredibly hard for me to sit down and do it. If I am engaged with it, I can hyper-focus. You know, I can focus so much, I forget to go to the toilet. You know, it's ridiculous how much I can focus when I'm engaged. So that's another part of what we want corporations who join us on the Brain Badge certification to understand, is that it's about getting people to work in areas where they're interested and where the strengths lie. And then you get that extra level of engagement and input. And, you know, when you get people, it's all I experienced at my last workplace. You know, I didn't really have to do anything that I wasn't good at and that bored me. I had the freedom to say I'm not interested in that, and they give it to somebody else to do. And so I was constantly doing stuff I was engaged with and found interesting. I went from really spending most of my professional career struggling to just doing the stuff that I was good at and I enjoyed and I was interested in, and, you know, went from floundering to flourishing, really. So I've experienced it in a workplace, and it's a really glorious thing. That's a big driver for me around Brain Badge, is it changed my life, that experience. And I think that everybody deserves to have that experience. You know, work should be like that for everybody, whether you're neurodiverse or neurotypical. So that's the other part of what we do as well, I suppose. It's obviously my passion's about neurodiversity because I'm neurodiverse myself, and 3 of our 4 kids are neurodiverse. But magic that makes it all work is cognitive diversity, the complete range of different thinking styles. There's a framework for understanding problems, which is called KNEFIN by a guy called Dave Snowden. And it splits problems up into, broadly speaking, 4 different zones, from chaotic through to obvious. And what I've discovered is that myself and people who are like me, we have brains that really thrive in very, very chaotic problem spaces. And then neurotypical people kind of like sit in the middle. So, you know, some prefer a little bit of obvious, some prefer a little bit of complex. And then you have other people who, with different neurodiversities, who really thrive in the detail, obsessed, obvious problem space. So, you know, neurotypical people sit in the middle of that, and neurodiverse people are kind of the outliers around the edges. So you know, a lot of people talk about neurodiverse superpowers, but I don't like that at all. Or if somebody says, tells me I've got superpowers, I'll accept it, only if they're prepared to accept that I've got super deficits as well. You know, I've got a brain that lets me do some, just lets me thrive in chaos, but it causes me massive problems in that day-to-day obvious problem space. Like, I really struggle to fill in a simple form. It's incredibly challenging for, it sounds ridiculous, but I'm almost incapable of filling in a simple form.
Oh, I just want to add to that, like, quick comment. Like, does it almost feel like, you know, when it's the most, like, mundane, where it almost feels painful to do because it's something you really don't want to do, but you have to?
Oh, God, yeah, it's absolutely brutal. It's horrible, but like I say, in the place where I used to work, Tech Futures Lab, I mean, this is the level of support that I had occasionally. You know, you had to fill forms in or things like that. But the GM, Sarah, every time I had to do this form, she'd actually get me and go, come into the office, sit down, just talk to me, and I'll fill the form in for you. That's the kind of amazing level of support that I had in that organization. You know, it was having the psychological safety to be able to explain that to them. And then, you know, beyond just being able to explain it to them, people actually genuinely wanting to step in and give me that support in those areas where I struggled. So, yeah, a lot of that mundane day-to-day stuff that lots of, you know, it's like 80 or 90% of business. And unfortunately, that's the bit that I struggle with. The good thing is I can do some really quite cool stuff in complex problem spaces, which kind of offsets the challenges that I have in that BAU space. So, yeah, but there's an awful lot that I struggle with day to day, like whether that was at school or whether that's in the world of work. And it's how we work as a team at the observatory. It's, you know, we're a mixture of cognitively diverse people. I work with other people who have beautifully different brains who we kind of find our own space to work in. You know, I work in that really complex, chaotic space. My friend Kate is kind of more in the middle, and she does a lot of the stuff that I just can't do or find incredibly difficult to do. So that's, you know, we genuinely collaborate.
And the last one I want to hit out is burnout and how it's so much different for a neurotypical experiencing it compared to those who are neurodiverse.
No, absolutely. I mean, I can't remember where I read it, but I read a comment a while ago that said that it was somebody talking about finding out that they were just neurodiverse. And the way they described it was, it's like I've been playing a computer game all my life, and suddenly you find out the rest of the world's been playing it on normal and I've been playing it on extra hard. And it's that there's a thing called cognitive load theory, which it's how much your brain can cope with before it just goes, nah, I've had enough, which is what burnout is. And so just going through a normal day, neurodiverse people have less headroom than neurotypical people because we've just got so much more going on. So, I mean, an example is if I'm in a business meeting, as well as having to try and focus on something that's boring and not interesting to me, I'm constantly having to, you know, I struggle with when to speak and interrupting people. So I'm constantly having to rein in that impulse to want to do that. And the other thing, when I talk, it's I swear a lot. And so constantly having this thing go through my brain going, don't interrupt, don't swear. And I've got all of that going on top of all of the meeting stuff. And yeah, it's just, doesn't take much more to kind of tip us past that limit. And then it's depression, mental health problems, feeling like a crap human being, all of that kind of stuff that goes with it. You know, that happens to neurotypical people too. But like I say, we just have a bit, it doesn't take as much to tip us over into that burnout state than neurotypical people. We've just got less headroom because of how the world works and how it expects us to fit in with their, you know, we're expected to meet these neurotypical expectations, and it's just extra hard work. Like you say, it's that masking. It's you learn to pretend how to play the game like the other people, and it's hard work.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.